It is the Ringer NFL Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kevin Clark. Great show today. Yahoo's Charles Robinson joins to talk about the trade deadline, some of the minor moves made, the moves not made, some of the big names who may have been on the trading block, plus Patriots and Cowboys and Antonio Brown. Today's episode of the Ringer NFL Show and the Ringer Podcast Network is brought to you by State Farm. Getting great car and home insurance from State Farm at a surprisingly great rate, that's like drafting a player that becomes an all-pro, the real deal. State Farm agents provide personalized service so you can customize your insurance to fit your needs, like a GM putting together their very own roster. You need a team that supports you, and State Farm's got a great one. In addition to agents, the award-winning mobile app helps manage coverage, pay bills, file claims, and more. With a great price and even greater service, State Farm goes from strength to strength. Choose insurance that always brings its A-game. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/RingerNFL. Just go to Indeed.com/RingerNFL right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Charles Robinson, senior NFL writer at Yahoo, host of one of my favorite podcasts, Therese Paylor. What's going on, buddy?
I want to kick this off by sharing a conversation that took place in my household this morning. It was a real conversation.
Okay.
So what are you doing today? Oh, well, you know, it's the trade deadline, and I'm going to keep an eye on the election today. And I'm going to do a podcast. I'm going to do a podcast with Kevin Clark. Oh my God, are you going to be on Slow News Day?
Oh, wow.
No, it's baby, it's just a podcast.
Oh,
is Mina Kimes going to be on?
Oh,
no, I mean, it's just going to be me and Kevin. Can you poop the dog before I get home?
Well, we'll get you on Slow News Day one of these days, but we're here to do an emergency trade deadline podcast for a trade deadline where nothing actually happened. It was exciting for about 10 minutes there when Will Fuller might get moved, you know, the last week or so. Stephon Gilmore's name was thrown around. Most of the big names here, big being relative term, those were dealt days ago. Yannick Ngakoue, obviously, a couple weeks ago, goes from Minnesota to Baltimore. Carlos Dunlap goes to Seattle after he puts his furnished home on the market. But this was not anything, you know, Avery Williamson goes from the winless Jets to the undefeated Steelers, but this wasn't anything spectacular. In talking to people around the league, Charles, did you expect this? Because there's so many things. The cap is going down, and the rising cap allowed smart, flexible GMs in years past to sort of start making these moves. Hey, play a little bit of fantasy football. Obviously, with the cap going down or flattening, that does not happen anymore. I think there's just so much uncertainty around the league. The cost of the value of draft picks is going up because no one knows what the future of free agency looks like. So I think there's a lot of reasons this happened. But from talking to people around the league, Charles, did you expect this?
Yeah, I did, because there was one team in particular in the AFC that I knew they were sellers and buyers. They had a couple of pieces that they wanted to move, and then, you know, they're in the playoff picture, so they were also buyers. And so I checked in this morning and I said, you know, where are we at? Like, what do you think's going on? And the GM was just like, it's dead. He's like, this is dead right now. He's like, I don't know if this is like COVID or, you know, because guys are, you know, people were trying to sort of offload players or get this done really, or at least get infrastructure in place late last week. And if it didn't happen, you know, everybody's just kind of, you know, dinking around right now. But as you said, I think it's this idea of like teams sitting there going, okay, well, we can roll some salary cap into next season. So we don't necessarily want to be buyers right now. You know, next season's free agent class could be interesting because there are going to be a lot of guys who we think are going to have to sign 1-year deals. There are going to be some economical purchases. So maybe we're not going to go for it this year. And then actually, it was interesting. His GM said to me too, he said, look, a big part of the component of this too was two big sellers that we all thought were going to be there were Philadelphia and maybe the Saints. You know, early in the season, you thought, hey, if this doesn't go right for the Saints, they're going to try and sell off because they've got all these salary cap problems next season. Well, both of those teams are in the playoff picture. You know, Philly's sitting there going, they're giving us the division. So we're not going to offload a bunch of salary now. Let's go for it while we still can. And, you know, and then obviously the Saints are where they are. And then I think another one too, the Texans being, the Texans fielded a lot of calls for not just Will Fuller, like a number of like defensive players, their wide multiple wide receivers. And I think part of the problem was you had GMs who are like, we don't know what the hell the Texans are. Like Jack Easterby, right, like running this thing. And like, the guy is like, it's like, you know, telling Jimmy Swagger, like, hey, man, like, can you maybe pull off a couple trades for our franchise? Like, he doesn't know what he's doing. And so, you know, they're like, hey, you're coming out of the box with like Will Fuller with a second round pick. And teams are like, you're not getting a second round pick for this guy. He could get hurt in like literally 30 minutes after we trade for him. He could blow out his knee. And we're not giving you a second round pick for that guy. And so it just, I think it mucked up a lot of the picture. And that's how you end up with like, basically the trade, all these trade deadline shows. It's like the Facebook meme with the mom who's like, no kids showed up to my kid's birthday party. Right. Like, this is terrible.
Yeah, no, I think that we're in agreement on that and sort of how that played out. With Will Fuller in particular, did you get the sense that the Texans were going to move off at some point, or even that, you know, were you, once that negotiation gets deep with the Packers, and obviously adding a weapon to that team would do a lot, you know, with Aaron Rodgers. Did you get the sense that you thought they were close, or was it always just sort of they were too far apart with the second round valuation?
No, I didn't think they were ever close. Like, I don't think, like, Brian Gutekunst wasn't going to give him a second round pick. Like, no. And, you know, like, I think, like, was Matt LaFleur interested? Absolutely. Was Aaron Rodgers, would he have loved to have had Will Fuller? Absolutely. But Brian Gutekunst is, I mean, before he landed that GM job, he was a road scout for a long time. He's going to be a hoarder of draft picks. You know, in Brian Gutekunst's mind, he's like, hey, if we got to go get guys, I'm fine signing some guys in free agency, but I'm not going to just start surrendering assets, you know, particularly considering the offense is playing pretty well and Aaron's, you know, functioning at a high level. And we have a number of sort of role players who are, they're maximizing right now. So I thought, if anything, the Packers might have added a defensive piece, which I think they need more. I mean, they could use some, a run stopper. You know,
a run stopper would be nice to have. At some point, someone's got to stop the run in Green Bay, and they could have used that. Them not doing anything was a little bit surprising to me. But as you sort of mentioned, Brian Gutekunst, I talked to him a couple weeks ago. I've talked to him a handful of times. No one, I mean, obviously, this is a league with Bill Belichick, so Bill Belichick plays the longest game out of anybody. But that Ted Thompson school, they're very disciplined.
Yeah.
They're not going to reach. They're not going to go off their board. I mean, the whole Jordan Love thing is because they believe in best player available and they play the long game, right? Yeah. And so they're not going to say, hey, we can win the Super Bowl. Let's panic trade a second round pick for Will Fuller. So that part did not surprise me. Stephon Gilmore, was there anything there? Was that just, you know, the Patriots being the Patriots, right, is that someone like Stephon Gilmore is always available. That's why Chandler Jones gets traded. That's why Jamie Collins gets traded. I mean, that's just sort of how the Patriots operate, is that if you can get value, they'll maximize it. Right. But was that ever real? And did you think that the Patriots might have been bigger sellers than they were today?
Well, so I've heard Gilmore for a first and a player. I heard it could have gotten done for a first. Okay. Now, and to me, the Patriots, this is not a surprise. They managed to get a first out of Brandon Cooks. Like, I mean, they managed to get, you know, they'll move off of a player a year early if they have to, if they can get a pick out of it. But what I think chilled the market a little bit, and actually the AFC GM, who I talked to this morning, I think would have been a Stephon Gilmore buyer if the price had been a little bit lower. But what he said to me was, you know, I know there's another year on that guy's contract, but I'm not giving up a first unless I'm getting a guy back and I know he's locked up at least 2 or 3 years, you know, down the road, which means I got to redo a deal with Stephon Gilmore. My owner doesn't want me to redo it. He's not like, hey, let's do long-term contracts. Let's deal for a guy at the deadline and then do a new contract with them. No owners are trying to do contracts right now. So I think that actually chilled the market a little bit with Gilmore. And I asked him, like, are the Patriots aggressively signing? He's like, no. He's like, they're not aggressively. He's like, they're kind of ambivalent. He's like, it's weird when you talk to him. It's like, maybe they're buying some players. Maybe they're selling some players. They're listening. They're checking to see sort of what you're offloading. But he never felt like this was Bill sitting there going, hey, we got to, you know, we have to kick this into gear. We've got this massive reclamation project that we have to get underway. They already have cap room next year. They're already in good shape. So I don't think there was any inclination on their part unless they could get that first round pick to move Gilman.
Before we move on from the broader trade deadline sort of topic here, was there any bigger player that was a surprise to you that was at least brought up in trade conversations? We said, hey, that's interesting.
Yeah, well, Watt, I think J.J. Watt, there were, you know, I know the Texans, there was some interest in potentially, you know, grabbing J.J. Watt. And I actually think, like, if Bill O'Brien had still been with the Texans and they were in this place right now, J.J. Watt might have gotten help. Like, J.J. Watt may have said, hey, you know what, like maybe it's just time to sort of move on to the next phase of my career or whatever. But, you know, Watt, I think, is happy sort of with the development since Romeo Crennel came in. I know Crennel really didn't want to give up any pieces because I know people don't want to believe this, but Romeo Crennel would like to keep that head coaching job. But that was one that I think there was a little bit of poking around. I am surprised, frankly, that the Tennessee Titans didn't make a bigger move. Like, you know, obviously the Desmond King move from the Los Angeles Chargers was an economical move that they made. I thought maybe there might be sort of a last second flourish to try and get an edge rusher because Vic Beasley and Jadeveon Clowney just are giving them nothing right now in terms of finishing sacks, but that obviously didn't happen.
Titans are an interesting case. I think that I saw over the weekend that they're giving up the worst third down against percentage in the history of the league. Yeah. So the fact they didn't make maybe more of a move, I don't know, they think they can fix it in-house, it's fine. I want to get back to the Patriots for a second. So you wrote this week, really good column, basically saying that it's time for a rebuild in New England. And I thought you made some good points. I was really surprised to see Belichick's defense of his cap strategy over the last week, because that is very, very unusual for him to defend anything. I mean, frankly, I mean, when there's any misstep, I think he lets the result speak for itself. And obviously this has been an awful season and Cam Newton has not met their expectations. The skill guys have been terrible. And, you know, the opt-outs were something, but I don't think that anybody expected them to be playing this sloppily. And again, I didn't think he'd come out and say, you know, we sold out on the cap and obviously we limited all that stuff. That's just not, you expected that. Okay, why did you expect that?
See, I think I have a conspiracy theory about this.
Yes. And
this is only knowing some of the people.
Conspiracy who, Charles.
I think that Tom Brady's success is bothering Bill more than people think. I really do. And I think Bill knows and has always known. First off, I think when Brady departed, there was more to that than anybody. I think Bill thought that that would fix itself.
Hey guys, Kevin here. About 10 seconds of this answer was dropped due to technical issues. Insert your own joke here about technical issues popping up during a Belichick conspiracy theory answer. However, Charles finished his point, basically said Belichick misjudged the Brady situation with free agency, and then said that he thinks it's significant that Belichick sought out Charlie Weiss to give the interview to, since there wouldn't be much pushback.
And the reason why he's going to roll out this idea of it being a cap issue with Charlie is because Charlie's not going to go, well, geez, Bill, let's look at your draft classes going back 4 or 5 years. Let's start to look at the fact that, you know, you've drafted some serviceable players, but, you know, I really don't care if people think Pro Bowl is a metric or not, but you can't go back to 2014 and not have a Pro Bowler who you drafted. It can't just be, well, Malcolm Butler was our Pro Bowler, and we just happened to sign him as an undrafted free agent as a rookie and luck out. I mean, he's gone a long time without these. I think when you look at all those drafts, they're just, that's not the big fat piece of the foundation that you should be able, if you're a really good general manager, a really good drafter, 52 picks, you should have 15, 16, 17 guys who are filling out a really strong, robust backbone on your team. And instead, a lot of the COVID opt-outs were guys from before that and older guys and guys in their 30s. And so I thought it was interesting that he rolled it out there for Charlie. And I think he knew there's going to be a follow-up to this with the Boston media, which there was. So there Bill was. Comes out and he repeats it again. And it's like, so if I keep repeating this enough times, it's not going to be, man, look at Tom. And what we had been hearing too is like all these forlorn like Patriots fans were like, oh my God, like Tom's having this success in Tampa, and Bill, what did we do? Why did we let this happen? And why couldn't we work this out? I think this is part of Bill constructing the narrative of like, hey, this isn't all on me. This was part of the plan. And okay, if you say so, I think that's BS.
I mean, it was very much look over there, because don't look at my drafts, look at our salary cap. And I wasn't surprised from that side of it. If you're going to blame anything, it would be that, because you don't want anybody to start looking at your, you know, the skill guys you've drafted, for instance. But I also think that it's just uncharacteristic for me to see any excuse from him. And that's why I was surprised with the whole thing. Yeah. And so I guess let's game this out here for a second. What do the Patriots do to make this in any way better for 2021?
I'm not sure that really this is, I mean, get Cam to play better. Like realistically, right. Like what do you, the only thing, particularly when you don't make any, I know they made, you know, a minor move with Isaiah Ford and all that, but to me, if you're going to make your roster better, the easiest way for any team to make your roster better is to get your quarterback to play up to his talents. And Cam, I don't care what Cam says, but since the COVID stuff, he's not been the same player. Like something's not right there. And I don't know if it's health related. I don't know if it's, you know, he's having some confidence issues, or I'm not exactly sure what it is, but he does not look like the same confident player that he was throwing off his back. Now, granted, Cam throws off his back foot a lot, but it's just, you're just seeing these things that are cropping up now. And it's like, okay, Josh McDaniels, you got a bunch of people around you. Every time a head coaching job opens up, they make sure that your name's out there with reporters and in the ether for every head coaching job. Here you go. Do it with this guy. Like, do it. Like, fix him. Like, figure it out. Figure out a way to repair this with him and make it work. And I know N'Keal Harry's not there, and I know Julian Edelman's on IR and all this stuff. I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers, last season, the dude made it to the NFC title game with a lot of luck, but not a lot at the skill positions, right? Like, so figure it out. Like, that's how you're going to improve.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Modelo. What does a true fan look like? It's cheering the loudest. It's never missing a game, no matter what. And for that, you deserve an ice cold reward, because you are a fighter and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Shop delivery or pickup options near you at ordermodelo.com. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/RingerNFL. Just go to Indeed.com/RingerNFL right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's go to the other side of that equation, which is Tom Brady, who's having... All right, listen, the Giants game was not a triumph exactly, but they won. Everything's fine. He outdueled Danny Dimes. But if I'm looking at this Antonio Brown situation, I think it's one of the most... I don't know, fascinating is the wrong word, because it has real disaster potential, because it's Antonio Brown, and he's left three organizations who generally know what they're doing, and those organizations would do anything to get him out of the building. And now you're dropping him into a Super Bowl contending team. Your read on this, you wrote about this last week on Yahoo. Your read on this is what, and how do you see this playing out?
Well, my read on it was, it was Tom. And the thing was, to me, when you watch this whole thing unfold with Tom and Antonio Brown after he was offloaded by the Patriots last year, and Tom just having this like social media love affair with the guy and constantly sort of like coaching him up and giving a pat on the back on IG and, you know, and then going and spending time with him during the Super Bowl. And in my mind, I'm like, if he's leaving the Patriots, I don't think that, I remember thinking this, like, there's no way he's not telling Antonio about, hey man, I'm getting out of here. Like, we could play again. We can play together again. And I think Antonio didn't burn that bridge. He burned every other bridge. I will say this, the fascinating thing to me about Antonio Brown is, A, seeing how kind of all of the off-the-field accusations, the civil suit, the sexual assault allegations, all these things are now sort of becoming sort of, they're fading. They're it's like you turned on the, you know, you turned on the filter on your Zoom and like, hey, all of a sudden the whole background gets fuzzy. Like, it's kind of what's going on with Antonio Brown. Yeah. And that, and then also I think in a weird way, it tells me something about Tom. Like, I think Tom has a killer instinct where he does not care about certain, like, Tom is more about winning and in pretty much any means necessary than people realize. And I think Antonio Brown is an illustration of Tom being more of a killer. Like, I want to win. I don't care if a guy's got problems. I'm going to make excuses for him if I have to.
Well, even the Tampa thing, I mean, that team was built for him. Tampa, if it was a normal season, Tampa would not be, is not the most amazing franchise. It wouldn't have a great atmosphere. You know, they had a bunch of empty seats last year, all that stuff. It's not, all he cared about was this team and this roster and this coaching staff maximizes my ability to win. By the way, the funniest part of that, the Brady thing on Monday night was when he was like, well, Antonio Brown's got to live with me because he moved across the state and doesn't know anybody. It's 3 hours from Broward County to Tampa, okay? He didn't move. This isn't a soccer player who moved across the world here, okay? I live 3 hours from my home, and I, you know, from my childhood home, and I was there yesterday.
Listen, he's not going to college. He's grown, okay?
Like,
he's
okay.
He's a grown man. Like, you can move to a new city and not know
people. 75, Antonio. We're going to be fine.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, you have financial means to construct whatever environment you want around yourself to last for a couple months on a football team and not be, and oh, by the way, it's in the middle of a pandemic. Like, what's the deal? Like, oh, you can't go out and he's not gonna be able to hang out with people outside. Well, guess what? Most people really can't anyway, but this is just quintessential, interesting folds of Tom Brady, yeah, Trump, sure, Tony Robbins, you know, Antonio Brown, like his, I don't know who said it on Twitter, but it was great. Someone said his Christmas card list is like amazing. Like, the most interesting Christmas card list.
Amazing. Yeah. It's Tom Brady lives an interesting life. All right, let's finish up here with the Cowboys, who are deep sigh. That's the way you'd put it. Deep sigh. So they may not start DiNucci this week. Cooper Rush might get a look, might promote from the practice squad in some way. Andy Dalton no longer has a concussion, but now he has COVID. This is awful. Do you think there is any chance that Mike McCarthy's one and done?
I don't, because I think Jerry and Steven are both stubborn, and I think they're so invested in him that, you know, I think that went out the door when you saw Jerry. There's an economy to how Jerry Jones speaks, and yes, normally he is very like, hey, we're still in it, and we're, hey, I'm, you know, we still got a chance in the division lead. And he's still kind of doing that, but he started to creep in this idea a week or two ago about, like, we knew we had the right guy in case things went bad. Like, if we had to go through something like this, we had the right guy to do it. And I'm like, when he starts saying that, I'm like, man, he ain't firing this guy. Unless something, like, somebody comes available, unless Sean Payton comes available. I personally think he'd fire anybody for Sean Payton.
I could use, you know, we haven't had a good Sean Payton to the Cowboys room in like 4 years. And we can just, with Breeze leaving, we can just fire that right
back. Let's get it going right now. I mean, let's throw a can of gasoline on this whole thing. But, you know, so I don't think that McCarthy's going anywhere. Now, Mike Nolan, you know, if it gets to the point where it's just doesn't get any better. And frankly, I think it actually did get a little bit better. You know, you saw some guy, I mean, Randy Gregory comes in. Get Leighton Vander Esch back in there. The defense isn't going to, I think there's a chance it won't look horrific the rest of the way. That's going to give Mike McCarthy the credit to basically use with Jerry and Steven and say, look, he's going to be okay. We just need to keep working on the roster, the defensive roster, and fit it to his scheme, and we'll figure it out. But I don't think he's one and done. I think the bigger question now is whether it gets bad enough that they fall into that complicated gobbledygook that's facing the Jets and the Giants and some of these teams that could potentially land a top two pick and sitting there going, man, Trevor Lawrence is amazing. We're, you know, if let's say the Jets get the number one pick, okay, it's going to be Trevor Lawrence. They'll offload Sam Darnold. They'll figure it out. But that number two pick, teams are going to have to look at Justin Fields and they're going to have to sit there and go, is this guy in the mold of the next wave of quarterbacks that can literally, you know, transform who you are for the next decade? And are we sure about Dak? Because we have not gotten to the point of signing Dak. I don't think it'll get there. I really don't. I think even if they had that pick, they'll take a tackle. But you don't want that conversation happening in the Cowboys fan base. And you and I both know, it was funny. I told someone, they're like, why do you keep writing about the Cowboys so much? And I'm like, because people read more Cowboys when they lose than when they win. And I'm like, it's basically like their fan base is like, it's like that person who drives on the highway and there's an accident way far ahead. And they're like, well, I could move three lanes over and move on with my life and speed past this. Or I could stay in this lane the entire way, hoping that's a horror show. And if I get there and it's just like a rear end accident, at least I get to flip everybody off and scream four letter words. Like that's the Cowboys fan base. That they're in it to see the wreck.
So I've actually not written as much about the Cowboys in my career as I should have. Just from, you know, I lived in New York and just geography wise, I was just more in tune with the East Coast teams. Got down to Dallas, you know, four or five times over the years. Went to one of the playoff games down there. But remember TV executive telling me this once, and I absolutely believe it, that numbers wise, metrics wise, the TV networks understand that if you just covered the Cowboys on like a random Wednesday, you at all times, if you just did Cowboys from sunup to sundown, you would get better ratings than your normal NFL programming, without a doubt. Like they have the analytics on this. If all the networks, if ESPN NFL Network just went wall to wall Cowboys, the ratings would go up.
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
They became the Cowboys channel.
Yeah, I mean, we see it. I mean, no, you know, just this what we write, what we produce, we see the metrics of it. And Cowboys, like I said, I mean, I think it, when it's worse, it's actually, I'm kind of like, okay, I need to move off and let me go cover the rest of the league. And it's, and unfortunately, it's just always this, like, there's just always this churn with the Cowboys. And let's be real, part of that too is that Jerry Jones is like
he's
owner.
The king of content.
He talks every week. He talks twice a week. And honestly, like not only twice a week on the radio, but there was a time when before COVID, he talked to you after the game. So you'd get the owner three times a week talking about what was going on. It's
or anytime in like the hallway. It's not press conferences. Every other, just so the listener knows, in 31 other buildings, not counting the Packers, obviously, because they don't have an owner, but we'll have Mark Murphy as a stand in here. It is so hard to get the owner to talk in most of these places. So hard. It is, they have these formal press conferences, I would say on average two or three times a year. Some owners talk once or never during the year. It's just the owner just does not want to talk. Jerry Jones will talk to you whenever you want. I mean, Brian Curtis has written amazing pieces about this all the time, and I can't say enough about it. But what I will say is that turns on its head in a year where DiNucci might start, and all of a sudden Jerry Jones goes on the radio and says, quite frankly, it was too big for him.
Yeah, he wasn't ready.
Like, did he have more yards than Carson Wentz?
He wasn't ready for this experience. And then obviously the COVID news comes out about Andy Dalton.
Yeah,
I'm sitting there and I'm like, maybe you should have waited for the COVID test to come in before you start killing this guy. God. Because like, I mean, what if someone had asked about Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush and he had said something negative about these guys too? He just can't, you know, he can't help himself. He produces content without even trying. But that's
content. And now we get Garrett Gilbert.
Yeah. Yes.
Garrett or Cooper Gilbert. Rush. Cooper Rush and Garrett Gilbert splitting snaps of practice in week nine.
Kevin, anyone who's watched the offensive line, you could like put in Melissa Gilbert behind the offensive line. And you're going to get the same. Okay.
Same ratings. Awesome. Charles Robbins from Yahoo. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks to Charles for joining us. This was a special Tuesday edition because of the trade deadline. The schedule for the rest of the week, Cole, Ryan Shazier, and Caitlin Jones will be on the show on Thursday. Warren Sharp and Chris Vernon will be with you on Wednesday, and then Warren and Joe House on Friday. So great week of content here on the Ringer NFL Show. This has been the Ringer NFL Show on the Ringer Podcast Network.